Journalist Jad Sliman of National Public Radio interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 8, 2021, on public health messaging that aims to persuade the audience at the expense of truth, some examples from COVID-19 and earlier. This is Segment 6, the Communicative Accuracy Principle and the Face Mask Example. For the other segments, the complete hour and 45-minute interview, or other content on risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
But then I guess the pitfall is if you come across information that wasn't presented to you, then it seems like you're being lied to.
That's right. That's right. There is and has been since the 1950s a standard in risk communication. This is before the risk communication had a name. A standard called communicative accuracy. And the essence of the communicative accuracy standard is, you know, yes, you have to simplify when you communicate to people, but you want to simplify in a way that when they learn more, they are not going to learn something that makes them think that you lied to them. They're not going to learn something that makes them think that what they learned previously was false. The example of communicative accuracy that I used to give to clients is, you know, if there are 12 studies that show your emissions are safe and 2 studies that show your emissions are dangerous, you know, you may not want to report all 14 studies, but you damn well better report the 2 that show your emissions are dangerous. You know, because if you leave those 2 out, when people find out those 2, they're going to think you're a liar.
And so with this idea that, okay, we have to simplify in order to get this behavior across. I mean, the thing that I'm thinking of is the messaging around masks initially was this, I guess maybe you can talk about this. What was kind of your impression of like the initial mask messaging early on in this pandemic, where from my perspective, it was a lot of the public doesn't need them on one side of the spectrum to even as extreme as they're not effective for the public.
There are a bunch of things that were going on, but let me see if I can tease some of them out. They knew as early as February. They had examples of as early as February of asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people starting clusters. So they knew that people who are not sick or not yet sick can be infected and can transmit the infection to other people. They had examples of that. They published journal articles with those examples as early as February. They had reason to know that if an infected person who feels healthy wore a mask, that person would be way less likely to transmit the virus. You know, they knew that masks would work as source control. That is, as a way to keep an infected person who doesn't know he or she is infected from transmitting the virus. Okay. But there are 2 things they didn't know. One, they didn't know how often that happens. They didn't know what percentage of transmission is from people who are not symptomatic. That's something they didn't know. And they didn't know how well masks might work, not as source control, but as PPE, you know, that is as incoming rather than as outgoing. They didn't have data for this particular virus that gave them reason to understand how well a mask might work, and of course, you know, there are lots of kinds of masks, but how well some mask might work to keep the wearer from getting it if you really aren't infected, but someone near you is. But the main thing is, you know, they did have reason to think that if you don't know you're infected, we wish you were wearing a mask, but we don't know how often people don't know they're infected who are able to transmit the virus. We know it happens, but we don't know how common it is yet. Okay. On top of that, they already knew that there was a mask shortage. Now it was not a shortage of cloth masks people make in their living room. It was a shortage of N95 masks and surgical masks. And they knew that hospitals were going to run short and were already running short, and the supply was your problem was going to get worse. And they knew that masks were really important in, you know, for healthcare workers. not just treating COVID-19, but for all kinds of needs for people, you know, working in hospitals. So they put those two together, and they're, you know, decided that it was on balance, it would be a good idea to discourage people from wearing masks. Now, if they realized how often asymptomatic people transmit, they would have reached a different conclusion. So that was an area where they knew what could happen, but they genuinely didn't know how often it happens. But that's not what they said. What they said, as you pointed out, what they said is masks are useless in ordinary life. And they knew that was somewhere between an exaggeration and a lie. But given that they were quite sure there was going to be a shortage in hospitals where their masks are important, and given that they didn't really know how useful they would be in everyday life because they didn't know how often asymptomatic people transmit, it was an understandable piece of dishonesty. It was a well-intentioned piece of dishonesty. Then, are you with me so far?
Yeah, it seems like
there's two other pieces I have to add.
Sure.
The first piece I want to add is part of this is they never thought about homemade masks at all. Homemade masks get around the problem because there aren't going, you know, you're not going to be using homemade masks in hospitals. At least they hope they're not. And they could have said, listen, please don't buy surgical masks. Please don't buy N95 masks. But if you want to make or buy a cloth mask that's not a surgical mask or an N95 mask, God bless you. We don't know how useful they are. They might be useful. We haven't yet measured how useful they are for various purposes. But it's not going to compete with healthcare workers, and, you know, feel free. They didn't say that partly because they didn't think of it, partly because they thought if they said any mask is good, people would want the best masks, and partly because there's always a bias against low tech. By public health, they don't like recommending bandanas, you know, when they've got high tech masks going in their own lives. So they should have said, you know, we wish you wouldn't use the surgical and N95 masks, but, you know, God bless if you want to use homemade, you know, cloth masks. That was the first mistake they made. But the big mistake is after they found that. Masks are really useful. After they found that asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic transmission is a big deal, and they really wanted people who feel fine to be wearing masks anyway, they didn't say, we changed our mind. They didn't say, you know, we misled you, we oversimplified, we're sorry. What they said is new data have changed. The science has changed. So they didn't own up to their prior dishonesty and explain, you know, why they were coming out of the closet. Instead, they pretended, and this, you know, that we're talking, you know, in April when they switched on a dime and went from, you know, wearing masks is stupid and unnecessary and antisocial to wearing masks is essential and pro-social. I mean, they flipped overnight. But they flipped months after they had data to suggest that they ought to flip. And they flipped without owning that they had been previously dishonest. So, you know, you can make a case for what they said in February. You can't make a case for not owning it in April.
I guess what struck out to me about that is like what you choose to be certain about. It's like if it seems like the public health had these two competing things. They're certain there's going to be a shortage of PPE in these hospitals. They know this is going to happen. There's a possibility that asymptomatic spread is, I mean, people had reason to kind of suspect this, but they didn't know if this was a problem. So they
didn't know how big a problem.
Oh, right. So they chose, it seems like they chose like one certainty over another. Well, like we're certain we're going to need these masks. So let's, like, it wasn't even communicated that like this could be a problem, I guess is one of the simplifications, that asymptomatic spread wasn't it didn't really pop up on the radar until, you know, this advice to start wearing masks.
Well, it was on their radar. I mean, they were very interested in asymptomatic spread, and you know, they were endlessly asked. Some of the early answers were somewhere between dishonest and over-optimistic. So, the, you know, WHO early on said there's no evidence of asymptomatic spread when there was evidence of asymptomatic spread. They didn't know whether it was frequent, and they pretended it hadn't happened yet. So, you know, I mean, I think they were worried about asymptomatic spread, but they didn't yet know it was a very big part of the whole. They knew it was a non-trivial part, but they didn't know it was a big part. So they pretended it wasn't a part at all. And then when they learned better, they changed their advice without explaining why their advice had been less than honest in the first place.
I guess if I'm
trying- in hindsight, you know, if we all had it to do over again, what would we want them to say?
Yeah.
You know, we would want them to say, wearing masks is useful, not mostly to protect you, but mostly to protect other people from you if you're infected. And if you feel sick, you should certainly wear a mask because you might very well be infected. But we're learning that even if you don't feel sick and you're out and about because you feel fine, you might be unknowingly infected. So it would be helpful for you to wear a mask. On the other hand, the best masks, which are N95 masks and surgical masks, are in short supply. And we really hope that most people can use a little self-control and not use those, because the hospitals are desperate for them. And then if you're hospitalized with this disease or with any disease, you're going to want the healthcare workers who take care of you to have masks. And you know, for them to have masks, the rest of us have to try not to take the masks that they need. So if you want to wear a mask, please wear a cloth mask, not a medical grade mask. That would have been a complete message. And why didn't they say that? Partly because they weren't sure that was true, and partly because they didn't think that would work as well as the untrue thing they said.
Yeah, it does actually, I mean, I think you used the phrase gamble before. It does seem like there's quite a lot of uncertainty, just baseline. There's just quite a lot that public health doesn't know, which I think complicates this. Like, it's not so easy to see this as completely irresponsible. And I guess it's, I don't know. Like, it seems to me that, like, if you really don't know, there is an argument to go with the truth that's more than likely going to get you the behavior you want. But I guess the backlash we've seen in retrospect is now people don't, you know, there's quite a lot of, you know, people play the clip of Fauci all the time talking about not using masks.
Yeah. I mean, changing your mind is more recoverable if you didn't sound more confident than you should have sounded in the first place. I mean, if you say it's a X is a no-brainer, then you lose a lot of reputation when you come back later and say X is wrong. The right answer is Y. If you say, you know, it's a tough call. We have some evidence for X and some evidence for Y, but on balance, we think X is the better call. And that X is what we're recommending, but we're still watching. And if it turns out Y is better, we'll come back and tell you so.
So in that case, it seems like
then you don't lose reputation when you change your mind. But will you sell X as well before you change your mind? That's the question.
I guess so. Yeah. You could make an argument that, you know, public health should have kind of brought the public more into the fold of what they were doing. Whereas I think
exactly. That's what I think. But what they think is you bring the public into the fold, and the public understands that everything is through a glass darkly and everything is highly uncertain. And whatever you think you've got evidence of, somewhere in the literature, there's evidence that points the other way. If you teach the public that, they wind up less trusting, not more trusting. And they wind up taking your recommendations less to heart because they want you to be sure. Wow. That's, you know, their argument is the public wants you to be sure. If the public knows you're unsure, it won't trust you. You have to pretend to be sure. And once in a while, you'll get caught, and that's too bad. But on balance, that works better. Our argument is that might happen for a while because you've taught the public to want you to be sure. Now you have to teach the public to expect you to be unsure. And once you get over that transition, you'll have much more sustainable trust. That's my argument, but I've made it for decades. I have sold it to corporations. I have failed to sell it to public health.